Hey, I want to welcome everybody to the Continuous Design and the No PSD Movement Google Hangout. With me, I have Andrew Carr and Matt Copeland. They were two of the guys behind the article in the ThoughtWorks P2 magazine talking about continuous design and the No PSD Movement. They're going to talk a little bit more about the article and some opinions they have on this movement. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Andrew.
Thanks. So I guess for the start of this, one of the things we wanted to walk through was kind of the explanation of kind of why I wrote the article and some of the reasons behind it. So first thing to start with that is kind of to give you a gauge of my background. At the moment, I'm an experienced designer for ThoughtWorks in Australia, and I work mainly doing design work within continuous delivery teams. So that was kind of the start of it for me, because I've been working on a continuous design team and working through the process of actually being part of the delivery process as opposed to being, something that happens in it beforehand. And then I'll toss it over to Matt real quick and let him do some introductions. One of the reasons I want to bring Matt in is I had a chance to meet Matt when he was out here, and we were just very like-minded in this sense and kind of have a similar skill set and a similar passion for these types of things. So Matt, you can go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name is Matt Copeland. I'm a ThoughtWorks designer working in the U.S. Primarily where I live is somewhere between design and development. I come from a product design background, education and service design, intangible goods, and that type of thing. Did some startup work, ended up falling into developing products for market research, and then one day picked up a book because I wanted to learn my own scope and picked up another book and kind of fell down this rabbit hole of learning how to be a developer. So what I primarily do within teams is help to set up workflows between design and development to make sure that they're able to pivot well, to be able to, as you build products in a lean or agile fashion, that they can expand, that you're never locked into anything.
So I think part of what I want to discuss today was sort of the thing that kicked off this article. It initially started with talking to both Ryan Boucher and Mike Gardner, two of the developers here in Australia. Ryan's kind of a continuous delivery fanatic, and Mike Gardner's just a gun Ruby dev. They were working on the P2 magazine and sort of came to me and said, "Hey, I've heard you're really, really passionate about this concept of continuous design, but what does that even mean?" I Googled it, and this article from Martin Fowler in 2002 came up, and it doesn't sound like what you're doing and what he talks about is the same thing. So for me, I guess the way I've defined continuous design is to remove the upfront design that's part of majority of companies' creative process or development process. And I've actually been really fortunate enough to work on one of our enterprise clients out here, one of the big banks in Australia, to actually work on an iPhone app or iPhone and Android app that is going to be done using continuous design. So I keep using this word continuous design, so maybe I should define it. I guess for me what it is it's this something where, it used to be that we would do development and then we'd toss it over the fence to, the people that then implement it in production. And for me, I see no difference with what I do and what they do, what used to happen there and what happens now in the design world. The main thing is that so many companies, they come in and say, come in and slay the dragon, right? So I've worked on projects before where it's like, you've got 2 weeks, design the project, design the complete, screen flow of what this app's going to be, and then leave the project. And the inherent problem I see with that is that there are so many things that you don't get the benefits of continuous design and delivery in doing that, chuck it over the fence. A good example we were talking about previously was this idea of there's tons of established patterns and libraries that are out on the internet that could be used. With most of the design processes, as a designer, oftentimes I could go and design, say, a calendar that's going to be used as part of the application. And then what would happen is that calendar, the developers would then have to find a library or build a custom, if they're really wanting to stretch themselves, build a custom calendar picker. Where the reality of it is, if there's that conversation between development and design, you've got that ability to sort of say to the developers, hey, what library do you think you would use for this particular element? And then I can pull in that library and use the designs there, so we minimize the amount of work created by doing that. I think that's probably the best example I can think of from recent times that I've used. So I think the other thing that I talked about in the article as well is this idea of that sort of finalizing the design. I don't really believe in that. And a prime example of that is happening right now, which is the idea of I'm working on a project that spans the initial announcement release of iOS 7. When working on a project, I may have designed designs that were for iOS 6, and then iOS 7 gets released. If I was in an agency environment where that process was being done by an external design company, you'd run into this problem of not being able to update your designs without having to re-engage that agency and redo the work and re-finalize the designs. And that process is not only expensive, but quite difficult to do because it means you have to now kind of go back and readapt things and you don't have that dialogue back and forth.
It seems kind of wasteful to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of that effort, we see it consistently in, amongst clients. That's one thing we try to pull them out of, is the fact that they are spending so much money up front. Their designers are so disjointed from their development team that they're creating flows and things that just don't really work within a working application. They don't make sense to people. They do when you're looking at a still object, but they don't once you get it on a screen. And you, Andrew, you mentioned mobile. What about responsive? You know, responsive being what it is, you can talk about adaptive, you can talk about servicing, you know, lighter weight interfaces to people, that's cool. But if you've actually decided to go responsive for whatever quick reason, people designing for that is one thing I've seen as a big problem. I was on a project last year where the designers, it was their first time working in mobile, and these were very, very talented print-trained designers, but they had a lot of trouble actually being able to adapt everything and make their still documents to work at every single pixel level. And this was challenging for them, and what they eventually learned was, we spent every day on Skype, every day working within a browser, that it was just easier to make layouts. And I don't know, how do you feel about that? What have you run into in that area?
Well, I think for me, I guess I'm getting to the point now where, especially with CSS3, any of the styling effects and any of the general aesthetics that you might be able to get from a graphic editor like Photoshop or Pixelmator or Fireworks can be done with really simple CSS code. The markup for CSS3 is pretty powerful in the sense of that you want to do a gradient, you want to do a drop shadow, you want to do borders. You know, you can do all these really clever things that used to be fairly, you know, rounded corner, things like that. You can do fairly high-level design stuff in the browser now straight away. And again, like you said, you get that ability to adapt to different screen widths, screen resolutions. And if you look at the Photoshop filters palette, I could line up for most part, minus say like satin, you could line up any of the filters that you can apply to a layer in CSS, and it's almost as simple. You know, you're plugging in variables into form fields essentially, but they're just established pieces of code. And I guess the other thing that we talked about as part of this sort of prep before the article was, you know, design as a tool, or design tools have been changing constantly over the last 30 years. Like, when I first joined the industry, when I first started doing design, the first tool that was handed to me was Adobe PageMaker. And then about 2 years after that, I was, given, oh, no, we're using Quark now. And then 5 years after that, someone was like, okay, now we're using InDesign. To learn a new tool is something that I think designers are very capable of doing, so why not treat HTML and CSS as one of those tool sets? I guess that's the thing about that.
What have you heard as the biggest pushback to that?
Oh, well, I guess the biggest one I think that I've always heard, and I'm sure you've heard it too, is, oh, I'm not a developer though. Right, I don't understand this code stuff, and I think I don't think it's that hard. Like I'm actually under the process right now of just teaching a few friends of mine just casually how to do basic markup, and once people get in there and they get away from looking at how many brackets there are of like a fully composed page and how media queries work and getting into things that help to simplify the process, precompilers and pre-composers and things like that that help with that process, they find that it's actually not that difficult. They realize that, like, oh my god, this is not actually this giant beast that I thought it was. So within the other process, I think we were talking a little bit before about, like, so how do you change the process? Since so many companies rely on marketing agencies, how do you start that process? And I think for me, what we did is there's a couple ways. One is the last project I worked on, we actually pitched against a marketing agency. The idea being is that we pitched the idea of having two embedded designers, so one user experience person and a visual designer on the team, working to help design in the workflow with the development team. And we actually pitched against a design agency that was going to come in, do all the upfront design, and go ahead and walk them through what they would have done for the whole app.
So that's a similar situation that I've heard at a lot of ThoughtWorks projects, especially one that's actually going on now. It comes to showcasing from the start of the project until they move through. Within 4 to 6 weeks into the project, the ThoughtWorks team that had designed continuous CD2, whatever you want to call it, going on within their actual project. And they also had an agency that was competing kind of with them at the same time on a slightly different version of the app, but about the same thing. You could basically look at it as the client themselves had two different work streams coming at them to see which one pulled ahead first. What they found on a consistent basis on those showcases every 2 weeks was that the agency kept providing lots of documents, lots of PDFs. They were gorgeous. They were absolutely beautiful documents, very well polished, looked great. The ThoughtWorks team, on the other hand, especially in the early days, all they had was working software. And it didn't look, the actual styling polish to it wasn't that special. So it felt for them, especially at the beginning, the agency had a lot more pages, they had a lot more to show. But after about 4 to 6 weeks, the real value of having design integrated into your development started to come forward. Because as the agency was just making tweaks to their documents, and remember, 4 to 6 weeks in, how long is the deliverable? About 10. 4 to 6 weeks in, ThoughtWorks, they finally caught up to all of that polish, and it was all in a working application. The agency hadn't even started development yet. They didn't even have development in-house. They were going to have to go service it out somewhere else. Now, if you can imagine that happening at week 6, you have 4 weeks left. Even with a rockstar development team, and you're going to, for actually saving cost of 6 weeks of work for both agency and ThoughtWorks, you're going to be, wherever you are, but you're going to, the agency is going to outsource that somewhere else. That's fine. Now you have to debug all of the different disconnects that their PDFs didn't cover, all their edge cases. That's going to take a little while longer. And I can pretty much guarantee you which one would deliver first.
Yeah. I think, from my experience as well on that stuff, it's been something where the majority of the time, the ability to just simply communicate with development can really alleviate some really difficult issues. I don't know how many projects I've worked on where the stakeholders under the impression that it's going to be too difficult for delivery, or that the delivery team is under the impression that that's not something that the sales team wants. Having that collaborative environment across all of the channels from creation of the visual aspects of it to the creation of services can really affect the whole flow all the way through, and make up for a better experience. I'm a very strong believer in that idea that collaboration can not only save you time, save you money, and make everybody's jobs a little bit easier, but it means that you can also decide, like, as you're going through, if you're taking a lean approach to the project, you can go through the project and say you're going to miss that deadline because, let's be fair, like, no project ever goes perfectly to plan. I've never seen a burn-up chart that's exactly that straight kind of 45-degree line that's going up like everyone puts out there. There's always ebbs and flows in the workflow. And so the nice thing about this process is that as a designer, you can sort of be a part of that decision-making process as to what's the driving feature. And really, it pushes the designer as less of an actual visual designer and or an experienced designer and more of a product designer at helping to shape what the product is.
Andrew, have you ever seen that site called Little Big Things or Little Big Details, whatever that thing is? Do you know what I'm talking about? All right, there's a website called like the Little Big Details, and it's a Tumblr where people kind of post those little tiny tweaks that websites have that really make them special, right? Well, in the world of MVPs, how many of those do you get to put in? On average, how many?
Not many. Little ones, like one, two, maybe.
All right. And so that's kind of in design tweaks. So when you're when you're providing documents, you know, let's step back to before you started designing a browser. When you were providing documents for people to actually develop, did you think that everything would ever make it in?
Yeah, it's almost assumed because it have you ever had projects? I mean, I think most designers have had this happen where it's like you get your I remember doing it actually. I remember working directly with a developer at a small digital agency. I mean, by saying working with a developer, I mean it was one of the worst interactions ever because it was that same chuck it over the fence. The designers would have like 4 weeks to design this complicated website, and then the developers would have like 2 days to adapt a framework that we chose to use for it. And what would happen is I remember creative directors and art directors coming up with a printout, like holding the printout, where's the screen? Holding a printout up to your screen and like flipping it up and back and forth and like comparing, like, is everything lined up? Like, are all your pixels there? But only would happen at the end of the project. So development's finished and everything's been finalized and all of the debugging for IE has happened. And the developers are looking for like a desk check basically, and the art director's coming up and flipping it back and forth and comparing static art with HTML, and they're not the same. And I think that Julie Horvath from GitHub has that great talk about that. Is that like it's not pixel perfect, so why are we designing pixel perfect? You know, they're now with responsive even more so. Things can be fluid. Like you can have text areas that reflow. I've watched dozens of designers that have gone through and like made beautiful line endings on all of their paragraphs in their CSS, and I said, you know, that's all going to go away. Like none of that's there. Like you're going to have to release that instinct to have those beautiful line endings because it's going to reflow in CSS. So I think I definitely know that there was always that assumption of whatever I make on pixels is going to get it in there. And sometimes there would be stuff that would just absolutely, I remember having debates, I mean, the olden days of like having stacking tabs, right? Before you had CSS3, right? Having the ability to have like a foreground tab and a background tab, the designer, that took them like 5 seconds in Photoshop to create. But for the developers, that amount of work was actually a pain in the ass because they had to build, this is, you know, before we had, you know, nice technologies, but you had the ability to like, you had to create image assets for each, you know, state of that tab. And it was just a pain.
All right, we got a question here
on the
group. Thanks, Glauber. Designers in general need to have a high level view of the project, user behaviors, and user goals. How do you fit this high level analysis in the continuous design process? It's a good question. I think Ben Melbourne, within that PSD or the PDF, excuse me, the PDF that's part of the Google Hangout there, that group or event, he has a good article in about making time for design within this process. It usually starts with some visioning sessions. I've got a small article that talks about that on my blog. I can post it afterwards for you. During a product vision session, which happens about on average in a project every 5 to 8 weeks. And you sit down with your product owners and your stakeholders and you make some high-level ideas. What are your goals? What are the values? What are the things that are actually going to drive this product to be unique and provide value to the users? Those kind of sessions are where I would say that you establish that high-level view. After that, once you dive into your iteration planning and you have that all laid out, you know what will be in your release, that gives you your high level. And then
I think the other thing that I've seen that works really well with that as well is collaborative design. On the particular project that I've had a lot of success with the continuous design stuff on, what we actually did beforehand, and this sounds crazy as a designer to sort of release control of the project to the people that are going to be creating it, but we ran collaboration sessions. So we basically brought in stakeholders, security architects, developers, QAs, people from marketing and brand and said, okay, we're going to design a banking app. So let's go through and everybody that's going to be involved in the banking process, let's just start with each of the features that we know we want to have in the app and let's draw out what we want that to be. And then from there, the beauty of that is not only do you as a designer, I mean, as a consultant, I think it's really helpful because a lot of times you get dropped into companies that you have not a lot of context on, and the people there are going to have a ton of context. But you get that sort of general scaffolding of how people are going to interact or how people see solving this problem. And in the end, you become a bit of an art director or you become a bit of a sort of a design director for the project, but you get a lot of great ideas from those processes. And once we found one of those sketches that kind of lined up with the way that we actually wanted to design the app, that became the first design in that process. That doodle on a piece of paper became the home screen for our app, or that doodle on a piece of paper became the way to check a balance on a screen. And then that conversation point could then be pointed to and say, that's the first initial idea. You become a bit of an editor and less of a designer in that sense. But then again, once that next step happens where you're actually turning it from that sketch, and for me, a lot of times I've dropped a piece of my process, which was like sketch first, then go to Photoshop, then go to HTML. It's more or less just like sketch first and go straight to HTML. The amount of stuff that I can do, the stuff that I can figure out just by drawing sketches on a piece of paper, like doing five up, you know, sketches of the same screen, helps you to work out all that stuff where you can push pixels around in Photoshop and, you know, get the appropriate border radius or drop shadow, you know, sitting there and saying, is it a 4-pixel blur or is it 5 pixels? 4 pixels, 5 pixels.
What about sample data? Does sample data help speed you up? Because I find it does that for me a lot. Like I'll make
using real data, absolutely. Like I'm to the point now where it's like, okay, so what's the service that's going to be used? You know, I'm designing an ATM finder at the moment, and I said, okay, so what's the service spit out? And they're like, oh, well, it's like a series of text. And I was like, no, give me the JSON that it gives me. I'll read the JSON and figure out what attributes go there as well. Because then if I'm using real data that they've got, it's going to be exactly something they can create.
How many times have you been on a project where the designs are going to ask for something that services just have not provided and would be so extremely, like, just not possible? I'll give you an example. If you had an iTunes-type library and you wanted to know how far in each book, as you look at, like, your library and list of all the books that you've read, right, and you're looking at ebooks so it knows what page you're on, if you wanted to know how far you are in every single one of those books, and you have a collection of 90, and to know that is an extra service call, so you're ending up with a plus one, right? Every single one of those. Think of the performance level on that. So actually designing code and looking, like you said, looking at what is the JSON response I get. So actually designing within code lets you know that. And you're like, I could do this, and this would be cool, and we could put in a request for it. But I already know my own scope, and I know that by doing this, my performance is going to be absolute crap.
Yeah, and I think as a designer as well, you can fight the battles. Inevitably, you end up fighting the battles, right? So you design a bunch of screens. You know why each bit of those screens is important to you, and it's your job to justify what pieces have to stay in out. Like, I've done it before where I was like, okay, I'll trade you this card here that I think is really cool for something I know is more important. And I think that's the end of the thing is that when we're designing as designers, there's this attachment to our designs. We've all had that gut-wrenching feeling where you submit a design to an art director or a creative director, and it comes back, and something that you love, this like precious little pony that you've had, and you've not shown anyone, and then you hand it off to someone, and they're just like, no, that could kill your pony. Like, you don't want to, like, everyone hates that feeling, and you have to kind of release that a little bit and say, like, I know what I love about this design, and I know what I want to keep in and what keeps it special, but I know that I can't have everything. And again, that idea of incrementally building features as well, like, start with what's gonna.
So you're saying that it gives you, by studying the both development and design, you're saying that it gives you the knowledge to understand your own scope and understand the feasibility of your own designs.
Yeah, well, and even just having those conversations, having great conversations with developers, I think is amazing. I don't know how many times I've come up with like an idea, and I'm like, could we even do that? And if I was in a marketing place, I would just do it. I would just put that on the paper and say like, oh, here's this, you know, overall complete of the books I've read. You know, I wanted to know how many points of reading I've gotten done. But the reality of it is I went to a developer and could just have a 5-minute conversation and say, like, would we be able to pull this kind of data? And they're like, yeah, but it would be a lot of work. And then you can take that back to the stakeholders that are involved and say, this is what it would cost and this is what it would do. What do you see the value in it? So you've got eventually, you become a pitch man for your own design elements.
Do you find that powerful?
I love it. Because it means that you can have that point in the conversation where you have to realize what has value in the designs. And that's inevitably what we're doing. We're not creating art, right? We're creating software. We're creating something that's interactive and has data, has information, has content. Like, I don't know, in the last couple of years, I've been working pretty closely with people that are really content-centric people, like social media directors and things like that. And I found that having that understanding of actually those people are the people they hold the power because they hold the things that people want, right? You can and you can create products that are beautiful. Like how many times as a designer do you get like a? I guess it was more like during the days of like Found. You'd go on Found and you'd just surf through and you'd see beautiful websites and then you'd go visit it and you'd be like, okay, this is a really cool website, but it doesn't do anything. It doesn't offer me anything that I want to use, or it's just a Facebook for hipsters. Like I don't need this. Like, so I think there's not that understanding as well. So we're getting fairly close to the end of the scheduled hangout. I kind of wanted to throw out, if anyone listening has any additional questions, please let us know now. We'll try and answer them before the end of the hangout. Otherwise, Matt and I are just going to sit here and stare at each other in silence. I was hoping to get to see a sunset behind you. Anyways.
No, it's the east, man. You hang out long enough, though, you can see the sunrise. That might be a long night, though.
All right.
I do want to let everyone know that I'll repost it on the events page so it's not so buried in the thread, but we have an ebook that just came out today called How Do You Build the Right Thing? It's part one. It's a case of the disappearing design phase. Like I said, I'll repost that again so it's higher up in the thread, but definitely read that ebook. Also, I'm the global social media manager, so any additional questions you have for these guys later, any comments you want to make, you can always send it to me with the hashtag ThoughtWorks or the hashtag NoPSD, and I'll make sure to loop these guys into the conversation, and we can keep the back and forth going on Twitter as well. And also, I guess, Andrew and Matt, do you want to let everybody know your Twitter handles, and then I'll post them on the event page as well, so if they want to bother you guys personally, they have the ability to do that.
Oh, man. Let the trolling begin. It's at Matthew Copeland is mine.
I'm at 2 meters. I'm an American, but spelled the Australian way. Long story. Anyways, so it's at 2, M-E-T-R-E-S. So for you Spanish speakers, it's the number 2, me trace. So.
And I'll post those on the events page as well, so you guys don't have to write them down from here. But otherwise, yeah. Thank you guys for coming. I know everyone probably appreciated hearing more from a first-person perspective from you guys as to how you've dealt with this in the real world. And once again, message me on at ThoughtWorks or with the hashtag ThoughtWorks or hashtag NoPSD or these guys personally, and we'll continue this conversation online. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, everybody.